listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
National NFL reporter for the NFL Network, Cameron Wolf, following up on the Myles Garrett report, as Myles missed the media portion of practice today with a hip injury ahead of the Bengals and Browns opener. Cameron, then following up on that, which of course Mary Kay Cabot had first here in town, and saying not much concern for Garrett availability Sunday versus the Bengals, despite missing practice with his hip injury. Sources tell Cameron Wolf, Garrett is an Iron Man, and this is relatively normal for him. So we're going back on Myles wanted everyone to know he's banged up.
Yeah, your first read on this one was the correct read. That this just seems like Myles wanted everyone to know that he was dealing with something. And so we'll hear from Myles tomorrow, and then we'll hear from him just how serious or not serious it is. But it has to at least factor in a little bit.
Also, if you guys would like to see JP, his refusal to guarantee a Bengals win, despite thinking the Browns' chances of winning on Sunday are quite a long shot. You can see that now at 923TheFan on Twitter, or an X, whatever the hell you call it. Because, what'd you call yourself again?
The station's truth broker.
Yeah, the truth broker got loose earlier today. And when the truth broker's ready to tell some truth, you just better step out the way and let
are you
the train
mocking,
roll
are
down.
You mocking the truth broker now?
Not at all.
Is that what's, are you mocking the truth broker?
I don't want to get the truth directed at me, so I am not mocking the truth broker.
It sounds like you're mocking the truth
why
broker.
Why would it's a great nickname. It's a great moniker. Why do you think I'm...
We're gonna do Bang Biscuit all over again. I say Bang Biscuit on the air yesterday. Nick mocks it when we get off the air, and then he's done it six times today already.
You're the truth broker. I am under no legal obligation to be honest about how I feel.
I know. We're all very well aware of your lack of honesty. Oh, you see how that worked?
On what?
On what?
On what?
You're 3-win Wilson, but then you're also that. Well, hold on, but you're not even guaranteeing the Bengals win anyway.
Correct.
If you were guaranteeing the Bengals win, it's just an easy thing to do this week. It's very easy. I'm not falling for the trap that everyone in the media and everyone else around this town wants you to fall into. It's still Joe Burrow versus Joe Flacco, and it's wild to me that me being scared of Joe Flacco is a thing that's like being held against me.
I mean, I think you're just over maybe leveraging that fear. I think you've talked yourself into a position of fear, and I just don't live in my fears.
I don't think so. I think a lot of people in the city are looking at
the
schedule.
Everyone knows you're the truth broker. I'm fearless Nick.
Yeah, a lot of people are looking at the schedule, and they are very quick to realize it's going to be very hard to predict the Browns on Sunday in many, many facets, and this is the one that they're going
to
go with.
I mean, I did say 3 to 5 wins. I didn't say which ones were going to be the 3 to 5 wins.
We could guarantee that now.
Which one?
Pick out your 3 wins for the Browns. What guarantee?
Wait, so I have to guarantee 3 wins?
Let's guarantee 3 wins.
Because you won't guarantee 1 Bengals win?
No, well, you won't guarantee 1 Browns win either. We're in the same boat here. Let's not, let's not twist this around.
You're picking a 5.5-point favorite.
You're trying to get people to hate me here.
No, I'm not. You're very a little paranoid for for the truth broker.
Oh, yeah? Is that right?
A little paranoid.
I don't think so.
No, I like when people guarantee things. You feel so confident about this game and how it's going to go.
No, you don't like when people guarantee things. This still started this morning and everything else because you didn't guarantee what the Browns winning.
No.
It started based off of that lack of a guarantee.
They wouldn't get blown out. You're welcome. Straight shooter, Nick Wilson.
Pew, 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 pew.
See, now, straight shooter.
Shooting something.
Straight shooter.
Shooting misinformation.
I think is a little bit better than truth broker.
Okay. All right. Well, we can work on the nicknames later, I guess.
Now, speaking of guys shooting something.
Something.
Ja'Marr Chase was shooting the breeze with the Cincinnati media. And I don't really love this as smack talk, but he talked about some maybe desire to jump into the dog pound, but some fear of doing just that.
Cleveland got good field. I like their grass field. I don't have no problem with their fans or nothing. I always wanted to jump into the dog pound. I've never did that, but I always wanted to. So, I mean, Cleveland not bad.
Is that on the table?
No, I wouldn't do it. I heard they stab people in there. Messing with y'all, man. I'm a troll, bro. I do stuff to troll.
All right. So,
he does do stuff to troll.
And so that okay, now because he owned it at the end, it takes the bite out of it.
Yeah, it really makes the sizzle that the online community thought that it was. It really just kind of takes it out. Especially when you acknowledge that you're just trolling, what else do I have to do? But we know this about Jamar. Jamar for years has done this, and then he's made Joe Burrow have to be the one to be the adult in front of the room and stand up and kind of clean up his mess.
I just wish he was better at it. Either don't add the I'm a troll bro, or I don't know, just have better... Oh, I heard they stab people in there. And can we just get to the Cincinnati media, which I don't think that highly of, outside of gentlemen like James Rapine. Very fine journalist.
We love James. James is great.
We love James Rapine.
I like Mo Egger, too. I want that on the record. I don't love Mo Egger because I don't know him that well, but I like Mo Egger.
I'm merely in a situationship with Mo Egger.
Fair. I can't think of anybody else.
The rest of them... What were those good time Johnnies laughing at? I just have people. You're right, Jamar. They're the real trolls here.
I think they know that Jamar's a little crazy at times.
So they laughed out of fear?
I think maybe. They're just like, we know that Jamar's got a chance to just, he's a wild card of sorts. You laugh at his jokes.
Maybe it's because I'm not entirely good looking, or I was never a great athlete, or is never really valuable to anyone. And so I've had to earn my laughs.
You're valuable to me.
And my thank you, Truth Broker.
That's right. It's real when I say it.
I've had to earn my laughs and lack of laughs the hard ways. I hate when athletes have mid-ass jokes and these cornball media members. you got them there, Jamar. They two-step people in Cleveland. It's like you live in Cincinnati. Blow it out your ass.
Whoa, shots at Cincinnati? I hear it's lovely this time of the year.
Yeah, Northern Kentucky is very nice. The bluegrass state.
A lot of people talk high things about Cincinnati.
Yeah, because they're high. You ever been to Cincinnati?
Yes, I have.
Go 5 feet outside of the Kroger split. That's a great spot to get stabbed.
I thought their bar scene was really nice. I thought they built up a nice little downtown area. Yeah. People rave about Cincinnati.
If you go like four square blocks in Cincinnati, you're going to have a time of your life.
Oh, stop.
You go to the fifth block, Via Condias.
Oh, jeez.
Now who's the truth broker?
I don't know. I thought Cincinnati was nice.
The funny part about this is I don't really care about what Jamar Chase said because he copped to being a troll. It's the Cincinnati media joking about a mid-ass joke that it's like, you're going to stay your whole life.
I genuinely do think it's just because Jamar, he says something every other week. He constantly shoots off his mouth and then everyone else is left to clean up the damage. And so I think I don't know what the Bengals media was doing, but I know if I'm Joe Burrow, I look at it and go, yeah, I mean, I made sure they paid him a lot of money and I have to stand by him, but he does this all the time. He's a troll. Think about it. He even trolled Joe Burrow. Like, they got the Madden 99 ratings and Jamar Chase got the 99. And instead of going up to Joe Burrow and being like, hey, isn't this cool? He's like, hey, Joe, you got one of these 99 Madden ratings? When he knew Joe Burrow did not have one of those 99 ratings.
He would if he didn't look like Slim Shady.
He does this with everyone.
So where do you stand on a truth broker?
Well, I mean, you're not getting stabbed if you jump into the dog pound. Yeah. I didn't know people had a desire to jump.
You could get a Nurple, though. You could get one of those twists. Well,
so I didn't know it was like the Lambeau Leap where other players had a desire to jump into it. You know, like you see that all the time. If you have a touchdown at Lambeau, players are like, they're like jockeying and they're like excited to jump and do the Lambeau Leap. I didn't know the dog pound had that same allure.
When they first came back, before everyone just realized this thing is going south and it's going to keep going south. So, I mean, we're talking like, because I think it's hard for us to remember from like 99 to like 2008. While there were more lows than there were highs, there was so much more hope and there was so much more reverence for the Browns history. And there was so much reverence for like the 80s Browns from like people outside of Cleveland that like you would get players trying to jump in there. And it did get dicey, but nobody got stabbed. And maybe got pinched real hard. Couple dudes, I think, took, you know, punches.
I've seen him jump into it. There are Browns players that jump into it, but I feel like it's been way less since they did that end zone where they didn't spell it right. And the dog pound just, it didn't become a mockery. It just kind of became a place that was a little less cool than what it once was.
I also think it would be the consistent losing.
Yeah,
you know,
that doesn't help.
I think that's hurt the dog pound as well. 216-474-0092. Do you take umbrage to Jamar Chase, especially after he admitted to being a troll? And we will get into all good things, positive vibes in the 6 o'clock hour in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Browns Bengals coming up on Sunday afternoon. Sunday. Jason Lloyd joining us right now on the fan hotline. Hello, Jason.
Good morning.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. It's a football weekend.
How do you feel about the Browns' chances of winning on Sunday?
Actually, pretty decent. It wouldn't shock me if they won. I don't know that they're going to win very many after that, but no, I kind of get, I mean, Cincinnati's had sort of a disjointed offseason. They've had a lot going on. And, yeah, I mean, we know the history that the Browns have had a fair amount of success against Burrow and the Bengals for whatever reason. Denzel Ward always seems to match up well with Jamar Chase. And, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked at all if they won that game. I just don't know how many more they're going to get after that.
See that, but I don't like that. Because on Monday, I'm going to go, I almost cussed, I'm going to go ape. I'm going to go nuts. And then I don't want to have to think about what's coming against Baltimore the next Sunday. So can I at least just, can you just let me enjoy, if they win on Sunday, are you not going to start sending me nasty texts on Monday, are you?
No, of course not. Yes, enjoy it.
Because you're a bad guy. You're a bad guy, and I don't want you bothering me about that stuff.
I'm a bad guy. All right. Well, sorry about that.
That's true. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, there's no doubt that the one element of you've had success against Joe Burrow, I mean, a few years ago, I know he was hobbling, and I know the weather wasn't great, and he looked terrible. But a lot of that had to do with Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett was a game wrecker. I do wonder if they're playing anybody else, if fans would even be nearly as optimistic, because Vegas is not optimistic. You are the second largest home dogs this week next to the Saints. So is this just something that, because we're in Cleveland, we've seen the success against the Bengals, that we feel like we have a chance to slow Burrow down?
Yeah, probably. It's probably a lot of it. Maybe we can get more rain. I haven't seen the forecast. I don't know. Have you guys looked what it's supposed to be like on Sunday?
I thought it was supposed to be nice.
It's going
to
be great.
Nice.
It's going to be
last rain we're going to have for a little bit.
It's going to be cooler, but sunny.
Yeah.
What am I, Dick Goddard? Why don't you check your own weather?
I'm just saying. I didn't look yet. Yeah, I mean, I think the rain certainly helped the last time they were here, and the Browns were able to eke out that win. And, yeah, I think we probably are living off past history a little bit too much on that, because anybody from the outside looking in would take Cincinnati when this game. And Vegas has made very clear how they feel about the Browns this year. Are they wildly inaccurate on that? They have been in the past on teams, sure. I don't know that I would. I think they have this one nailed pretty close to how it's going to go.
Jason Lloyd with us right now. Give me an advantage. You think the Browns, the obvious is defensive line, but, we had a great defensive line last year and Dallas obliterated us in the opener. So what is it about this week that's making you, Jason Lloyd, of all people, think, yeah, they could actually do this?
The fact that the defensive line, I think, is a lot of it. And I could see Joe coming out and having a big game, his first game out. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's fresh. Everybody feels pretty good. That would not shock me at all. The run game, a little concerned about, obviously. I don't know how you could not be, just because we just haven't seen it with these guys. Not real thrilled with, never been very high on Jerome Ford. Curious to see Dylan Sampson, though. So, yeah, listen, if you can create a turnover to start on a short field, anything's possible. If the weather is cooperative, that helps with the kicking game in that stadium. So, I mean, listen, I'm don't think the Browns are going to come in here and blow them out by any means. But I do think it's funny. I was talking to somebody who has seen them this preseason, who has seen the Browns a few times over the years, who felt like this is the most disciplined and best coach they've been through training camp in the preseason. For whatever that's worth.
Put up the banner right now. Let's raise it.
But like last year was a disaster on every front imaginable. And you mentioned the Dallas game. And I was talking to guys halfway toward the end of the season who said, oh, we knew we were not ready for Dallas. We that went about how we thought it was going to go. Now, no one's going to admit that in the moment. But well, after the fact, they knew. They were not prepared and they were not ready. They knew the offense was a bit of a disaster. They knew Deshaun didn't look great. So I don't think anyone was really surprised by how that went. I don't get the sense that, at least from the way training camp was run, at least from how things have gone to this point, people outside the team that I talked to looked at it and thought this was the best coach. This was the most disciplined and the best coach that they've looked in a number of years.
Jason, Ross Tucker was on Afternoon Drive yesterday, and he said, frankly, that everybody's safe for this year and next year. Do you believe that they're safe for 2026 as well, no matter what this year?
Well, I think, I don't want to speak for Ross, but I'm guessing he's going on the fact that they're going to be not very good this year. They're going to take a quarterback, and now you have next year to see what that looks like. I don't know that he's necessarily wrong, but at the same time, I don't know. In the past, you know, we've talked about this before. In the past, I think Jimmy has made very emotional, reactionary decisions. I think he's trying to get away from being that person. But I talked to someone who worked in that building who got a glowing review and was fired 2 weeks later. So it's hard to have a lot of confidence in that. If you're going to fire these guys, you should have fired them last year. Like, that was the window. If you wanted a clean house, if you wanted to blow them all out, then do it after last season. I don't know. You know, at the time I was saying I wouldn't fire them, but I totally understand the reasoning to fire them. Like, yeah, it was bad. It was really, really bad. And if you want to just say, look at the product on the field, it's not nearly good enough. We haven't drafted well enough. And this was not a great coaching year by Kevin's standards. We got to go and start over. Once you brought them back after last year's debacle, how could you fire them now? You know you're not going to be very good. You're not supposed to be very good. You start a 40-year-old quarterback, and you got two rookies as backups. How can you possibly win at a high level in the NFL under those circumstances? So it doesn't make any sense to me to fire them now. If you're going to do it, you should have done it last year.
So what do you think your threshold is for wins to make sure everybody's safe is safe going into next year?
Well, that's a tricky one, because do you really want to win a lot of games? Honestly, for the betterment of the franchise, I know people are going to drive off the road and scream and yell and say, of course you want to win games. That's why you're out there competing. Okay, but teams have to go through rebuilds all the time. The Cavs just went through a multi-year rebuild.
That's basketball. I don't want to hear that. How many rebuilds? I mean, good God, how many rebuilds have the Green Bay Packers been through? How many rebuilds? Well, the Steelers aren't that great, but how many rebuilds have they been through? And they're always a competitive franchise. You know, how many rebuilds have the Jacksonville Jaguars been through? They've been through a ton, and they suck. So
yes, and you're pointing out the difference in healthy, high functioning franchises and not. And this is a not. When have they ever been a healthy, high-functioning franchise?
So we should just be a more dysfunctional franchise then? Just lose?
Well, there's two ways to go about it. And the Steelers don't have a quarterback either, and they don't seem concerned by it because they always go to the playoffs every year, and they'll eventually figure it out. What has this team ever showed you to make you think that they're a team that can just figure it out
on
the fly?
What has this team ever shown us that losing is going to create a decent culture here? Just perpetuates more of the same.
Yeah, I agree. But also, let's not act like they do this over, because I keep hearing that. They're constantly rebuilding. No, they tried winning for 7 years, and it turns out they weren't very good at it. But from 2018 to 2024, it was all gas around here. Fair? Agree? Is that fair?
Yeah.
For 7 years, they went for it. And I don't want to keep going back to the Deshaun trade, but that wrecked everything. So now you have to deal with the fallout of that, the consequence of that. And for 7 years, you got one playoff win, and you totaled 53 wins, and you still had a losing record. And that was your era of contention. That was your contention window with this nucleus, with the Miles and Nick Chubb and Joel and all those guys. That was your contention window. 7 years, you got one playoff win, and you still had a losing record. And now that's gone, and now you have to start over, because this is how it's built. You're still paying the pain of the Deshaun contract and the fallout of that. So I don't know what the alternative is here. Okay, if you go out and you win 8 or 9 games this year, it'll be a fun year. I think it'll surprise a lot of people. And so from that, I mean, it's pitiful that that's the bar, but if you win 8 or 9 games and people have fun, okay, that's great. Well, now a team that hasn't been able to find a quarterback in 25 years, it just got infinitely harder, because now they're probably not in position to go get one. And maybe if they bundle 2 first-round picks and something else, they can move up. They're still not going to get their top choice, but maybe they can move in position to get one of their guys that they really like. So it's just, it sucks that this is where they are. But I just don't see the alternative.
All right. Are Kevin and Andrew then a package deal at the end of the year?
See, this is just me guessing and me speculating, because that comes up a lot and you get that all the time. And I think there's a part of this ownership group that is nervous to make a change at one of those spots because they finally have a coach and a GM that don't want to strangle each other. And they see it the same way. They pull on the rope in the same direction. There's no power struggle or battle here, and that's all that's ever been. And I think there's probably a fear of making it worse if they make a change at one of those spots. Are they tied together? No, I don't think they are. But the reality is, if you fire in one and not the other, whoever you bring in isn't necessarily going to love the other is still here. If you fire the GM, he's going to want his own coach. If you fire the coach, I don't know. I guess in this instance, I think Kevin has more standing than Barry. Am I wrong on that? Do you agree or disagree?
I would say that's true. And also, yeah, I mean, there is a valid point you make there. I mean, whoever comes in would have a clean slate. Whoever stays will have some stink on them.
Yeah, so that's not great either. So I don't think that they're a package deal because they didn't come as a package. Kevin was here first. And all these years later, does that matter? Maybe not as much. There was a time where I thought that was significant, that they chose the head coach first and then sort of backfilled the GM job later. And I think Kevin has had a little bit more success, quote unquote, than Andrew has had. I love this draft. And I'm really hoping that this draft is a springboard to better things ahead. And I do think, I know fans don't necessarily want to hear this or they don't care about this. They have two really good dudes in those spots, and they are high character guys. And you don't find that very often in professional sports. There's a lot of scumbags running around in those jobs. And they've got two really, really, really high character guys, and that has to count for something. Now, you got to produce at some point. That's fair. I totally get it. But I do think that that's why there's some caution and some hesitation to move off of them. And also we have Jimmy coming out and putting his hand up and saying the Deshaun thing was on me. And we've litigated that 1,000 times over. But I do think that is important in this discussion, because if it was all the GM at the end saying, keep going, we have to do this. This is our only way out. That is grounds for firing. But I think Jimmy's sort of putting his hands up and saying, guys, this is a mess. I'm as culpable as anyone in this. So we're going to get through it together. I believe in you guys. He has craved stability. I know the reputation, but they also extended Hugh. They gave Hugh a 1-year extension. And so it's not like he's flippantly trying to fire everybody that comes through the building. He's not. He's craving for some sort of stability and semblance. And he's going to give these guys every opportunity to try and dig out of this.
All right, Jason, quickly, Quinshon Judkins, is this a matter of the Browns just trying to save money, or is it that they know something that maybe we don't know at this point? Why has this been such a stalemate, especially compared to the Mike Hall situation a year ago, which actually had a gun involved?
Yeah, I have no idea. I've thought for 2 or 3 weeks. I've been saying sooner than later, and it still doesn't get done. I don't know why. I'm not going to make up a reason. I have no idea. It's very strange. If it's the and I don't know this, but how do you not give him a fully guaranteed deal if you bring in Isaiah Bond and give him a fully guaranteed deal when he just went through the same thing and he was undrafted? You gave an undrafted guy a fully guaranteed deal. If I'm Quinshon, I'm like, well, now I won't. If that was the hang up earlier on, well, now you really don't have any reason not to give it to him. So, and I don't know if that's it or not. I thought this was close. I thought this was close for a couple of weeks. I thought it was an any day now type thing, and it still hasn't come to be. So that's one of those things where later on, maybe more truth will come out of what's going on and what the hang up is. It's very odd. It's very strange, and it's very Browns.
What's the leash on Joe Flacco?
I would like to see shorter than longer, because I don't know what the benefit is. I've said, we were talking about that after the draft. What's the benefit in playing a 40-year-old quarterback? What are you getting out of that? And that's why I really thought Kenny Pickett was going to win the starting job. And had he not gotten hurt, I still think he would have won the job, because I just don't see the upshot in playing a 40-year-old quarterback. As soon as they feel, and yeah, they've got murderer's row here at the start of the season. So if they can get through a couple of these games, Turn it over to the kids. Let's see them, because you got a decision to make. And I think we're all in agreement that they are looking quarterback at the top of next year's draft. I fully expect them to take another quarterback. The proof of that played out last weekend when they were on college sidelines all over the country. And so it's on Dylan and Shador to change their mind and for one of them to show them that you don't have to go get a guy. The guy's right here in the building. But in order to do that, they both have to get on the field for more than a game or two.
Jason, we thank you very much for the time. God bless you and yours, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, boys. See ya.
Jason Lloyd.
Browns Football Sunday. Here we go. The 2025 football season almost upon us. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin. We go to the fan hotline. She covers the Browns for the Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Seen her all over Pro Football Talk, talking to Mike Florio recently. Good stuff. Mary Kay Cabot, nicely done. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Mary Kay.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, good.
We are well. We just did a little exercise. Most intriguing player at every position. And Andy and I had fun doing it, but we thought the guy who might be the most intriguing guy on this entire team might be DeJuan Jones at left tackle. How's he looked so far, and what are you hearing?
Well, he's looked good so far. It's hard to tell until you get into the regular season. It's really hard to tell because no one is game planning for you yet. No one is trying to attack your weaknesses. You haven't tried to see if you need to provide him with any chipping help or with any doubling or anything like that. So it's the unknown factor on the offensive line right now. And if he holds up and plays really well, I think the offensive line could potentially be one of the best in the NFL this season. But a lot of it comes down to how he performs.
Mary Kay, I thought it was interesting yesterday that Kevin Stefanski said he had never been to a big-time college football game other than, you know, his own games at Penn. I think that's kind of fascinating that your head coach...
That was funny.
Yeah, but it makes sense. If you're working in the NFL, it's kind of hard to get away on a Saturday to go watch a game. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I kind of knew that. I've heard him say that before, but this was the first time he actually said it publicly. So I actually wrote a little story about it and
put
a headline on it.
Yeah,
because I thought that was interesting. I thought people would find that kind of fascinating that he's never been to a major college football game before. But he started working for the Eagles right out of high school. And so right out of college, right out of Penn. So he didn't have those Saturdays. He, right from the jump, he was already tied up and busy and working in the NFL on Saturday. So you just don't have time to go to those kind of games. But it is interesting that in all of these years that he's never been to one. And as I wrote in my story, if you're going to pick one to go to, you want to go to Ohio State beating top-ranked Texas in week one.
Good point.
Browns had people there. They had folks at the LSU-Clemson game, according to reports. How active are they going to be this year, Mary Kay, tracking down every guy who might be a possibility for a first-round pick at quarterback next year?
Well, absolutely. Every time these top quarterbacks are going to be playing around the country, the Browns will be there in some form or fashion. They will be represented at all of these games. It's vitally important that they come out of the 2026 draft with their quarterback of the future, unless, of course, Dylan Gabriel establishes that he is their surefire 100% can't-miss guy this year. And it might be tough to do that unless he has a lot of playing time and a lot of games and a lot of data. So they are going to be crisscrossing the country, looking at all of these quarterbacks and trying to determine the best course of action in 2026.
What kind of pressure does that put on your number two and three quarterback, knowing that the front office is out looking for a quarterback every week? How do these guys handle that position, and how should they think of it for the long term, if you can even do that in the NFL?
Well, competition always brings out the best in everyone, and no matter where you're at in the NFL, there's always going to be someone pressing you. And so these guys should just get used to that, because that's the name of the game in the NFL. There's always someone that's right behind you, ready to take your job. And it's just the tension of the NFL.
Do you think the Browns had a nudge, nudge, wink, wink, Isaiah Bond, we really like you type of thing in place, Mary Kay, if everything cleared up for him from a legal standpoint? Or do you think that was a late, hey, we're jumping in here and trying to get this guy?
Oh no, it's documented. I mean, I have written a number of times that they stayed in very, very close contact with his agent and with Isaiah Bond throughout the process after the draft, when he went undrafted because of the arrest. They stayed in super close contact with his agent, and they never lost sight of him, and they always planned to acquire him if his legal situation cleared up. So that was not something that they jumped in on at the last minute.
How ready is he to play, in your estimation?
He looks pretty ready. He was doing two-a-days while he was out, and he was working really, really hard. And I think that showed when he came here. I was very surprised that he seemed to be in such good shape. You know, when you run that fast and that far as a wide receiver and you have been out of football for a while, a lot of times you end up with pulled hamstrings and other pulled muscles. But so far he's stayed away from anything like that. And he catches the ball nicely with his hands. He's very fast. His route running looks good to me. So I think he will contribute in week one.
Mary Kay, we know the names on the offensive line. I'm just curious your thoughts on, you know, what they're going to be this season and the ability to keep this, you know, front five, you know, healthy all year and guys who need to be ready. Just your thoughts on the offensive line.
Well, again, I think it's a good offensive line. It's got three all pros on it. And I think that Ethan Posage plays at a Pro Bowl level. So I think the only unknown there, once again, is DeJuan. But I think, I mean, he's got the size, he's got the talent, he's got the ability. It's an adjustment, of course, playing at left tackle. But I think he'll be able to make that adjustment. And it's just going to be interesting to see, you know, will it take him a few games? Will teams try to exploit that as a weakness in the early going? Will he be able to stand up to it? So other than that, I think they should be very solid across the board.
How's Jack Conklin feeling these days? You know, his health has been a concern since he's been here. When he's healthy, he's a terrific offensive lineman.
Yeah, once again, he's an all-pro, and that shows. I mean, that caliber of player just hits differently when you see them out on the football field. And he is certainly in that category. And he's another year out from his surgery, a very, very major knee surgery. In his own right, we talked so much about Nick Chubb's knee, but Jack Conklin really had to come back from a very serious knee injury of his own. Yep. He's done that. He's another year out from it. And so I think he'll even be better this year.
How has Kevin Stefanski grown in the last 12 months?
I don't know. I mean, he's pretty consistent. I don't know that I can honestly say that in the last year he's grown in any single category. I know that he tries to be better every year than he was the year before, and he's comes from a growth mindset, and he always tries to increase his knowledge of offense and every other area of the football team. But I can't pinpoint one thing that maybe he's grown in, except for maybe just in delegating things a little bit. I think that, you know, now he feels really, really good about his staff at all positions. And I think that he probably will do a little bit better of a job of letting Tommy Reese handle some things, letting Bill Musgrave handle some things that he would have taken on his own.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us, covers the Browns for the Plain Deal at Cleveland.com. You also covered Bill Belichick when he was here. You and I sat through many a press conference together. We know how painful those could be. I don't know if you happened to catch Bill after his North Carolina Tar Heels got smoked by TCU last night. Did you hear any of that press conference?
No, I've seen little snippets of it. Mary Kay? I didn't watch it.
It made me cry almost. It's like, Bill, you're trying to be cordial and nice. This isn't you. I had to laugh because I give him credit. You know, college is a different world than the NFL. But people were asking him questions, the type of questions that you and I asked him over the years and so many other people when he was here and in New England that he would not give a response to or would bite their head off or whatever. And he gave cordial answers to everything. I almost teared up. I felt bad for the guy, Mary Kay.
Well, you know what? It's early. It's early on in the process. So
that's a great line.
Sure, right? He wanted to put his best foot forward,
yeah.
Especially after a beatdown like that. So, not too surprised about that. wonder how it'll go, you know, weeks down the road.
It was just so strange to see the guy that we know is just so blunt and direct, and no, you know, everybody in the NFL knew that. But I just kept waiting when I'm listening, because I listened to the whole press conference, and I thought, well, that was kind of a cordial answer. And that one was a cordial. Oh, man, come on, Bill.
Who is this guy?
It was different.
Yeah.
It was different.
Yes.
It is weird, though, to look at their coaching staff and go, man, this is like a Cleveland reunion. Michael Lombardi, Freddie Kitchens, who else? Mike Prefer's there. Jamie Collins is there. I mean, I think I was a little intrigued by that last night, too. I'm like, there's some serious Browns influence on the staff that he has at North Carolina.
Oh, no question about it. It is. It definitely has a Cleveland Browns vibe to it, which is really kind of weird. But, yeah, some familiar faces that we all enjoyed covering here.
Browns and Bengals coming up on Sunday.
Are you being
Sunday.
PC on that? I'm sorry, Jeff. You're being a little PC on that, aren't you? We all did. I mean,
a little bit.
Sure,
yes.
We did.
Interesting characters
sure.
across the board. Yes.
Browns, Bengals. Bengals doing something different this year and playing Joe Burrow in the preseason. Joe has had slow starts in the past. I wonder if it pays off. What are you looking for on Sunday?
Well, what I'm looking for is how is Joe Burrow and how is that offensive line going to handle what looks to me to be a dominant defensive line of the Cleveland Browns. I think that is where the game is going to be won by the Cleveland Browns on Sunday, is their defensive line getting after Joe Burrow, and they better have a game plan for how he's going to get the ball out quickly and how they are going to function on offense, because I think Myles Garrett is going to come out with his hair on fire. I think Mason Graham is going to show out very well, and the rest of the offense, defensive line. And I just really think that that is where the game is going to turn.
You like the Browns?
I do, because of that reason. I just think they, like I said, they better keep Joe upright. They better keep him protected and able to function, or it's going to be a very long afternoon.
You did a great job all preseason. Loved all your training camp coverage, everything you did to get ready for the season. Can't wait to see your work as we get going on Sunday. Thank you, Mary Kay.
Thanks, Mary Kay.
Sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot, plaindealercleveland.com, joining us right there on the Fan Hotline.
Got a graphic for it. And as we did last week, even though there were no changes, you can vote on who has the better group of college quarterbacks. And again, we're talking about in pursuit of the most number one picks next year. We're talking about who's going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft in 2026, because this is of draft eligible quarterbacks. We'll get Pete's take on that coming up at 4:20. But you guys can vote now at afternoon 923 FAN. But I think there's a take emerging. And you said something adjacent to this earlier about the Bengals having almost as much as any as much pressure as almost anybody in the NFL. And I would agree with you, but I think there's something missing.
Okay.
And I think it's something that was pointed to when Ross Tucker joined us yesterday and talked about the Bengals and how they're treating this Browns-Bengals game on Sunday.
I would say Browns win would surprise me. Now, the Bengals guys have invested so much into winning this game. It's really remarkable when you think about it. You know, they never used to play their guys in the preseason. They made a concerted effort to change things in order to win this game. Like, I can't remember the last time an NFL team made this much of an adjustment, did this much to win the opening game, let alone against the team, you know, projected to win five games. On some level, maybe the Bengals could come in tight. Maybe they put too much pressure on this game or too much pressure on themselves. Maybe the Browns play free and clear. But, I mean, the Bengals are treating this game like it's the Super Bowl to get off to a 1-0 start.
All right, so this is why that last part was so important. Mm-hmm. I do think that the Bengals have as much pressure on themselves for the specific week one matchup as anybody in the NFL. The problem is, one, generically, everybody's got pressure on them. It's the NFL. But two, the pressure's coming from the Bengals. Joe Burrow is the reason why they're treating this game like it's the Super Bowl. And I think that's different. I think just the nebulous NFL pressure guys, that ebbs and flows. When you're winning, you don't feel it. When you're losing it, you feel it doubly. Like, there's just natural stuff that happens. I think every team feels that. But specific to the Bengals, it's Joe Burrow that's putting pressure, not just on his teammates, although that's, I guarantee you they feel it, on his head coach in the organization as well.
That's the part that honestly has me scared. The idea that when Joe Burrow puts his mind to just throwing 400 yards and five touchdowns, it seems like in the past he's been able to do so. Now, Joe doesn't play defense. And so this is the part where I'd tell Joe.
Tired of the Bengals.
I'd be like, Joe, you need to calm down just a little bit. Because if anybody learned last year, it should be you, that there's only so much that you get to control. No team had more 30-plus point scoring games last year with more losses in those games than what the Bengals did last year. So, if you would have thought he would have learned his lesson that he can do his part, and sometimes in football, that's not enough.
I just think it's unbecoming of a team that because you have Joe Burrow, if you have a quarterback of this ilk, even though they've been a 500 team the last 2 years with Joe Burrow, and again, 2 years ago, he wasn't 100% healthy for 100% of the season, so I want to make sure that's out there. But it's unbecoming of an organization to be this insane about
unbecoming. I actually kind of appreciate the approach.
Not week one.
I got worried that the NFL was moving into this laissez-faire attitude for the first few weeks of the season, and people were treating it like a ramp up, kind of like the case I'd made for the Chiefs last year, where they were just kind of treating the regular season like it was whatever. Meanwhile, they were just going to ramp it up in the postseason. And I like that they have an urgency to week one. I think it's a good thing that they recognize the last 2 years. When they started off last year with three losses and 2 years ago with three out of the first four games with losses, they realized, like, that cost us the playoffs. We got to treat these as if they are the Super Bowl every game.
I would argue that the issue with the defense, which has not been fixed, is why you didn't go to the Super Bowl last year.
But then your mentality is not going to change it one way or another then.
Well, no, exactly. Like, your problem isn't that Mike Tomlin has started out slow umpteenth times. People have written him off, and he's been a 9-10 win team later that year. Belichick, the famous expression that, you know, the real meaningful football starts after Thanksgiving. Like, that is the reality of this. If you're hyper focused on fixing week one, but you're not hyper focused on fixing the defense, I think you've missed the central point on why Joe Burrow had to put up historic numbers last year. It's because he was trying to outscore the other team because his team couldn't defend. I think that's if the Bengals don't win a championship this year, if the Bengals don't make the playoffs this year, it's not going to be because they lost to the Browns week one or they won week one. It's going to be because their defense is just as bad as it was last year. And I think this goes to the point of, I love to some degree that Joe is exercising his power internally to try and put pressure on the organization.
Yeah.
He did it with T. Higgins. He did it with Jamar Chase. The problem is, he didn't do with the defense enough.
Yeah, no, but like last year, the Patriots lost in week one. That wasn't Joe Burrow trying to put the world on his shoulders. They lost that game because they scored 10 points. Like, they didn't do their part offensively. And so if I'm Joe...
Joe also wasn't healthy in the preseason, though. He wasn't healthy in camp.
It's one of the cases I've been making for Joe in defense of Joe, is that he hasn't been healthy at any point to enter the season. But like, you lost that game. Well, the Patriots scored a whopping 16. It's not as if the Patriots ran up on you, and it's not as if the defense didn't do their part. Like, that was a complete bizarro game relative to how that season played out. Like, you, and that is the game when you look at it, when you win nine games and you miss the postseason by a game, that's you in or you being out. So I like that they're taking the approach that every game matters. I think that's an important approach.
I don't mind that they put an emphasis on trying to get better early in the season. That's like, understandably, hey, until week eight, we're crap. Okay, yeah, that's probably something you should work on. It's when you hyper focus on week one. Like, I think starting fast is more about week one. And I think I absolutely believe that you can sabotage yourself in the right pursuit, which is to be better earlier, to be more efficient, to be whatever the hell you need to be to win early. I absolutely think that's a noble pursuit if we talk about the early part of the season. But week one specifically against a team that was 3-14 last year.
So
feels peak desperation to me, and not good desperation. This feels bad desperation to me.
So when I've read stuff from Cincinnati, because, you know, I like to, and in game week, I like to read what they're saying, what they're doing. I haven't heard it from Browns specifically. I've heard a grouping, because their first two games are the Browns and then the Jaguars. And so like if you look at two teams that are not expected to be really particularly great. And so they're kind of looking at like these first two games as two games that last year and really 2 years ago, they faltered in and didn't do the job, and that's why they lost and not, are not in the postseason. And now they're putting an added emphasis on just making sure they get the job done against teams that, let's be honest, they're supposed to be able to get the job done with.
So I think they're, again, I think we're closer than maybe it sounds like we are on this. I don't have a problem with early emphasis, right? I still think the preseason thing is bananas. That's not, like, Joe's health was the bigger issue for your offense earlier in the season than anything else. So that's just the idea that him playing in the preseason is going to, and you know they're going to take a victory lap if they win this game about, that's why we play in the preseason, dumbest damn thing in
right,
the world.
It'll confirm something that they didn't really need confirmation of.
But, like, getting back to this idea, your problem last week isn't that you lost last year to the Patriots. It's that you got your ass waxed. And I think that's where, like, this comes back to the idea of there's a difference between competing and winning. The Bengals just need to compete early. And if you compete early and you're competitive in these games, even if you're 2-3 coming out of the first 5 weeks of the season, you can go, well, I don't want to go to the diff, but our diff is, you know, plus 10. Like, we were in all these games. It's the margins. It's the little things we have to clean up. The obsession, though, with weeks one and two continues to miss the point of when you start to put pressure on yourself and when it comes from your best player. And Joe, we've seen him. He's got a touch of Brady to him on the sidelines in games. You can get tight real quick at a point in the season where that could be as bad. Playing too tight is just as bad early as playing too loose. You kind of need to kind of meet in the middle there and find out who the hell you are in September. That's more important than just, well, we got to win this game because it's our Super Bowl. It's like, you got to win it. No, you got
to. I've had the Bengals. I'm trying every approach imaginable because the past 2 years they tried that laissez-faire approach. Let's see what we are and let's regroup by week five and week six. And it didn't work out for them.
Yeah, but again, I think that has a lot more to do with Joe's health the previous years. And I just, to me, focusing on it, again, it's not just, you made a great point. I want to make sure it's not just this game, but the first two games. I understand winnable games. I also think that there are diminishing returns when your star quarterback is so hell-bent to win a championship that he makes everybody, including the head coach, who already seems like a pushover and a bit of a simp, that you're putting this much pressure on it this early.
I mean, there's a real chance that Joe Burrow is identifying whether or not he wants to be with the Bengals long-term, and this season might be the make-or-break part of that.
Yes, and that pressure will be felt by everyone.
For sure,
that
and it should be felt by Zach Taylor, it should be felt by the whole organization.
But that pressure is also antithetical to
winning. A lot on this. No, I mean,
like, you can't be thinking, the guys in that locker room can't be thinking about Joe's future, neither can Zach Taylor. You just got one foot in front of the other.
It's one thing I've thought about within this game, is that will Joe Flacco and the Browns just be playing so carefree that it does in fact give them a little bit of an advantage. But I think for week one and for week two, I think it's important the Bengals show themselves that they weren't what they've been in the previous couple seasons.
I think if you've got Joe Burrow and you really have title aspirations, I think referring to it, I know this is Ross's words, but if they're really building this up to be their Super Bowl, to me, you have missed the central point of why you failed last year, why you failed over the last couple years with Joe, And why you just need to go out there and play football and not play uptight. You do not need any more pressure for that situation where it feels like there's already a lot of pressure. Are the Bengals putting too much emphasis on week one? I buy into the Browns are more carefree. They're able to be more carefree, and I think that's a benefit early in the season because I think one of the worst things you can be is too uptight. Pete Futek, College Football News, breaks down the second week of college football and our quarterback Deadpools in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Kevin Kugler joins us right now. He guarantees it's going to be an entertaining broadcast because he is the play-by-play guy on this game with Fox Sports, with Daryl Johnston and Allison Williams. And he joins us right now on the Fan Hotline. Kevin, good morning to you.
Just a caveat, my guarantees are not valid in the state of Ohio.
Well, then what the hell do we have you for, Kevin? No. Thank you for joining us this morning, Kevin. Getting ready for week one. Got football tonight. Nick Sirianni isn't going to acknowledge the banner going up over
I love that. I love that so much.
What? Hey, just real quick. I know it ain't your game right now, Kevin, but why? Come, right. You got to go out there. You got to acknowledge that. I mean, everybody on earth had you fired after week four last year, and you went on to a run to a Super Bowl. You can't acknowledge it. You can't acknowledge the banner.
I don't know why you don't acknowledge it. It doesn't make any sense to me. But it, you know, in the context of the coach and everything that goes on there, you know what? Probably it makes a little more sense.
He is a strange bird. Kevin Kugler joining us here in the Fan Hotline. All right, so you got one team that has been a disappointment the last couple of years, finished 9-8 last year. And then you got another team that's kind of in a state of flux. It's all over the place right now with the Browns. What do you expect to see on Sunday?
I'm hoping for competitiveness from both teams. That's the first thing, because, you know, like, you know, as I said, apparently I guaranteed a good broadcast, and a good game is what I will add to my guarantee. But I think what you'll see is offense. I really do think both of these teams have the potential to put up some points. The question for me is the same that you had last year with Cleveland. Are you going to turn over the ball? And if so, how many times? Because when you turn it over as much as they did last year, you're going to go 3-14. That's just the nature of this league. You cannot go to the playoffs. You cannot win games if you don't value the football. And Cleveland didn't value the football last year, and you were 3-14 as a result. And the Bengals, everybody knows the story of their slow starts, and I'm sure people will be frustrated because we'll talk about it at the top of the broadcast. Just a reminder that not everybody who watches our broadcast has, you know, great takes and great thoughts like you guys do who listen every day.
Thank you.
But you're welcome. But this is, I mean, this is the story with the Bengals. They've changed their entire preseason routine to try to not be 0-2 to start a season for the fourth straight year. So I think you've got two teams that feel like they've got something to prove, two teams that I know think they're better than they were a year ago. But again, can the Browns keep from turning it over? Can the Bengals stop anybody? That's going to be the real question this year, is what that defense does for the Bengals. You know their offense is going to be good, assuming health. Is their defense going to be able to stop anybody during the course of this season?
What I love about this game is obviously that it's the opener between two teams that know each other. A lot of trash talk, especially when it comes to the Browns and some of their defensive players.
The secondary with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, yeah.
I absolutely love it because they have been able to beat the Bengals. They're 5-3 against Joe Burrow, which is, I think, hard to believe if you told people outside of Cleveland that stat. But with that said, Kevin, like, it seems like the lead up to this game for Cincinnati, they're making this seem like the biggest start to a season ever.
There's a lot of pressure on him, and there's a lot of pressure on Zach Taylor. There's a lot of pressure on the franchise, because I think you've got a franchise that's starting to worry, are we wasting Joe Burrow? Are we wasting his prime years? Are we wasting a franchise generational quarterback if we don't get this thing turned around quickly? So I think there's a ton of pressure on the Bengals in this opener, maybe more so than on any team in opening week in the National Football League this year. I can't think of any other team that the entire storyline has been, you're not very good in the first 2 weeks of the season, like it's been for the Cincinnati Bengals, really in the entire tenure of Zach. 1-11 in the first 2 weeks of a season. The only win coming in overtime against the Vikings in 2021. I mean, this is the story for the Bengals. And I do think there is a lot of pressure on them to come out of the gates strong against a team they're favored to beat, but against a team that you said is 5-3 against Joe Burrow, and Joe's got one win in the city of Cleveland his entire career. I mean, this is not exactly an easy game for Joe Burrow in a game that the Bengals are putting a lot of pressure and emphasis on that they have to get out of the gates strong this year.
And when he won that game, Kevin, it felt, I mean, he almost looked like when Steve Young won the Super Bowl, and he was like looking like, can somebody get the monkey off my back? Like he was that excited to get that win. Joe Flacco, though, against the Bengals, 4,500 passing yards, of course, played against the Bengals a whole bunch of times when he was the franchise quarterback of the Ravens. 40-year-old guy, you know, a lot of people don't expect him to finish the season as the starting quarterback with the Browns. What do you expect from him? What is he saying he expects from himself this year?
We had him quite a bit when the Browns brought him off the couch in 2023. For some reason, our crew that year just kept landing on the Browns game. Sorry, Browns fans. And we ended up having two or three of those games that Joe had down the stretch. If you can tell me it's going to be that Joe Flacco, I think Browns fans are going to be very happy. He was tremendous. And I don't know that you can expect that fast forwarding 2 years, more hits later, more interceptions the last 2 years than starts. I mean, Joe's still got the great arm. I expect Joe to zip the ball down the field. I expect him to be able to hit a receiver in stride 35 yards out. I don't know what he's going to do to elude a pass rush. You've got to hope that offensive line is a little bit better with Mike Bloomgren kind of running the show now up front. I don't know what you're going to see from Joe Flacco from the ability to maneuver this team up and down the field, and is there going to be a run game to help support him? I think that's the biggest question with this offense outside of what the quarterback situation looks like is, especially early when you're still unsure what's going on with Quinshon Judkins, is Jerome Ford going to be that guy who's going to be able to give you a consistent run threat as a Browns offense to take some of the pressure off Joe Flacco? If it's consistently third down at eight and beyond, then that doesn't bode well for this Browns offense all season, regardless of who's playing quarterback, whether you have one of the two rookies, whether you have Joe Flacco, whether you have somebody off the practice squad, it doesn't matter. If you can't run the football at all, and I know this is a passing league and you're going to have to throw the ball a lot, but you've got to have some semblance of a run game, especially with a quarterback who is advanced in years and is not necessarily the most mobile of guys and really never has been.
Do you have any reason to believe Cincinnati's defense can take a step forward this year?
Other than just blind optimism that Al Golden is going to be the guy who comes in and sparks this team, not really. I mean, you have to hope if you're a Bengals fan that your secondary is going to go back to where they have been. Can Cam Taylor-Britt play like a number one corner again? That's a question. I don't know. Is Trey Hendrickson – I mean, look, Trey Hendrickson's probably going to have plenty of pass rushes, plenty of pressures, plenty of sacks, but that didn't exactly help them last year. Somebody else has got to come along for the ride. Shamar Stewart, somebody has got to be the guy on the opposite side. I know the Browns have had similar questions on the opposite side of Myles Garrett. Are they excited about Alex Wright? It seems like it, but is that going to be the guy to provide that heat on the other side when Myles Garrett gets the attention? It's a very similar conversation with the Bengals right now, is who's going to be the person on the other side to help out Trey Hendrickson. And I don't know that that's been determined yet. Maybe we'll start to see glimpses of that coming up on Sunday. But again, Trey Hendrickson led the National Football League in sacks. He's the top sack guy in the league the last 2 years, and it really hasn't helped the Bengals. That defense was really, really bad last season. It's got to be better because, again, you've got an offense that's going to put up points that has skill at every position. It's the defense for the Bengals that's the giant question going into this season. If it's not better, then they won't be better.
Yeah, we were talking earlier where we're joined by Kevin Kugler right now. He's going to be on the call this weekend in Cleveland. Joe Burrow has said very nice things about the Browns defense. It was a couple of years ago. He just had like 85 passing yards. It was an abysmal performance. He was banged up. There was a little rain, obviously. Situation's not going to be identical this week. But do you think, Zach Taylor will have the whole scheme revolving around making sure Myles Garrett doesn't single-handedly wreck this game?
I think you have to. I mean, you still have questions against the outside of that with the Browns, obviously, and you're trying to figure out if you can recapture the magic of 2 years ago when it was the top defense in the National Football League. No Owusu-Koramoah, that's a huge loss. I thought the Martin Emerson injury was really big, and I expected Jordan Hicks, when the preseason started, was going to be somebody that contributed, and then he tapped out 2 days into camp. So I think there's still a lot of things that you're looking at with this Browns defense that are questions, and they're questions too for Zach Taylor. But the one question is not Myles Garrett. You know what Myles Garrett provides. You know what he's going to do. And I think if you're anybody who's scheming against the Browns, especially in week one, the known commodity is Myles Garrett. How do you stop him? You figure you throw everything at him. You throw the kitchen sink at him to try to keep him from wreaking havoc. And then you see, look, if Alex Wright comes out and has three sacks in this game, you tip your cap. I mean, you probably don't if you're Zach Taylor because you're very angry at that point. But you tip your cap as somebody who watches this game and you say, you know what? They got somebody else now to go alongside Myles Garrett who can make some plays. And I think that's one of the things I'm anxious to see from this Browns defense. Among other things, I did a ton of great stories in this game. I'm excited for it.
Kevin Kugler, Fox Sports, with us on the Fan Hotline. So there's going to be some fans who roll their eyes at this, but I just can't help myself.
All right.
Will there be any shots of Shedeur Sanders on the sideline, any conversation about him at all during the game?
I understand there will be eyes rolling. I assume there will be a little conversation, but here's the thing I would say, and maybe Shedeur at some point in his career, maybe some point this year, becomes the Browns' starting quarterback. Like you guys said, who knows if Joe Flacco is going to be the quarterback at the end of this season. the conversation will likely be limited to the quarterback position as a whole. I don't know that it's going to focus specifically on Shadur because he's the number three quarterback right now. He's likely going to only be available in an emergency if Flacco and Gabriel both get hurt. So the quarterback conversation, at least as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure Moose feels the same way, my partner, Darrell Johnston, to me, the conversation is more of a big picture conversation because it's week one. Right now, Joe Flacco is the starter. You look at that first half of the schedules, I'm sure everybody has, and you say, woof, that's a lot to throw a rookie into. I don't care which rookie quarterback it is. But you also have to look to the future and say, we need to know what we have at that quarterback position before going into the draft next year when there's potentially other quarterbacks available that you might be in a position to take. So I think that's the bigger conversation as far as I'm concerned is the quarterback position as a whole. I don't know that Shadur is going to be the guy that gets a whole lot of the spotlight in this game.
So you call a lot of football. We've heard you on Westwood One here on this station. We've heard you obviously do, or we've watched you and heard you on Fox Sports. There's been 60-plus QBs that have started in the season over the last couple of years. That's an exceedingly high number now. Is there a theory that you have, or maybe even Moose has, about what we're doing wrong, either in the pros or in college with some of these guys?
My theory is sort of a mix. I look at it and say, in one aspect, we are paying these guys so much that we're putting them in right away, and we're expecting them to be great right away. And when they're not great right away, we discard them because Josh Rosen set the table for all of this. Remember the Arizona Cardinals years and years ago drafted him first round. He flamed out. They threw him into the fire with a team that wasn't ready for a rookie quarterback. He flamed out and he basically disappeared, bounced around the league a few years. They went and drafted Kyler Murray the very next year, and they tossed him aside. He was done. It was a first round pick that lasted a year. They tossed him aside. I think we've gotten into that mindset now with rookie quarterbacks. I mean, even as late as Patrick Mahomes, remember, as great as Patrick Mahomes is, he sat the first year behind Alex Smith in Kansas City. He had a year to watch. And I'm not saying that's the end-all be-all. We've seen young quarterbacks like last year, for example, Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, and even Drake May got better as the season went along as rookie quarterbacks. So it's not a tried-and-true theory. But I do think there are some quarterbacks that we rush into this thing too quickly. And we look at this and say, we've got to have a decision right now. We're paying you X amount of dollars. We need some sort of return on that investment. And if we don't get that return, we're going back into the draft and we're getting something else. We as a society, perhaps it's a societal question, we go out and if this thing doesn't work, we don't fix it anymore. We toss it aside and we go buy a new one from, you know, whatever big box store we want to buy it from. And we throw the other thing away. We don't ever work on fixing that stuff anymore because we just toss it aside and get something else. It's kind of the same mindset I've seen with quarterbacks in this league over the last decade. And to me, it started with Josh Rosen in Arizona.
Well, Kevin, when you make the fabulous leases so affordable and I don't have to go about fixing anything, and so let's not start about the right to repair laws in this country. I mean, my God, no, I'm kidding. Kevin, thank you so much for the time. Hopefully we'll run into each other on Sunday. If not, enjoy your time here in Cleveland. Have a great call on Sunday. I obviously hope the Browns win. You can't say anything, but still enjoy your time here.
I will. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. Kevin Kugler joining us from Fox Sports on the Fan Hotline. Guys, don't come after me for that. I had to ask the question.
It's great. I smiled. Anybody who's watching live on YouTube, I smiled. It was like, there you go.
You could see if you're watching, you could see my face when I thought of the question.
Yes. And look, if this is a close game, if this one is tight, I don't think you're going to see any of Shadur Sanders. It might be just a mention of it because, you know, his popularity probably warrants just that. If it's a blowout in the second half and Flacco plays terribly, I think you're going to be seeing a little bit more of Shadur Sanders.
Daryl Wright is brought to us by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Hello, Daryl.
Hello, boys.
Daryl, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Kevin Stefanski on the hot seat, as a couple of folks say, and then they also say he shouldn't be fired.
Huh? Who has him on the hot seat?
Fox Sports, Yahoo Sports.
Okay, well, that tells me all I needed to know.
He's not on my hot seat. This should put any NFL coach on the hot seat, 3-14 last year.
Yeah, I know, but there's just there's some things going on here that I don't think he's on the hot seat. The only way I feel like he ends up on the hot seat is if the building falls apart and him and Andrew aren't you know, working well together, which has not been the case in the last 5 years. But the 2 years that Kevin has had competent quarterback play, they've won 11 games and made the playoffs. So I think people keep forgetting that. The other 3 years, he's basically had to deal with catastrophes at that position. And while this year isn't exactly a catastrophe yet, I mean, there is the potential it could turn into that, depending how long Joe is able to play, how well he's able to play, right? How long can he stay healthy? So, I mean, for me, he does not enter the season on the hot seat. I will have to respectfully disagree with that, with both Yahoo Sports and Fox Sports on that.
Daryl, answer this question for me. The Browns beat the Bengals if?
Well, two things need to happen. One, they need to limit the damage that Joe Burrow is able to do with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. That's number one. And then number two, they do not allow Trey Hendrickson to take over the game. If those two things are in the Browns' favor, then I really like their chances on Sunday.
Quinshon Judkins is not here. We're not hearing anything about any arrival being imminent. Is that on the Browns? Is that on Quinshon? Is it on the NFL?
It's on the NFL. As far as I'm concerned, I feel like the Browns are in a little bit of a holding pattern, waiting to see what the league, because look, I feel like the league, whatever they decide to do, positively or negatively, I think that impacts the contract in some way, shape, or form, or informs Andrew Berry and how the contract needs to be structured and, you know, whatever needs to be negotiated there. So I put this more on the NFL right now. As far as the delay, frankly, I thought we would have a resolution by now, one way or the other. We don't. The NFL's obviously got to conclude their investigation and make a determination whether or not he did or did not violate the conduct policy. And then once all that is taken care of, then we'll have a resolution and Quinshon Judkins will be in here and ready to suit up and play some football. Mm.
Daryl, give me the players you're most interested in watching play for a full game and you know, giving this team the opportunity to win. Guys that you were really impressed with during camp.
It's the rookies. Mason Graham, Carson Schlesinger, Harold Fannin Jr., those three guys. I'm excited to see all three of them. They were all just outstanding during the offseason, training camp, the preseason, and I really can't wait to see them on the field in a game that actually matters, because Sunday the game does matter. But I'm really excited about those three players because I think all three of them have tremendously high ceilings.
Daryl Ryder joining us. He's our Browns beat reporter, taking a break from his duties in Berea. He'll be right back to them here in just a couple of minutes as Jim Schwartz speaks. Tommy Rees, offensive coordinator, spoke earlier today.
Yeah.
Are we going to see a Tommy Rees offense, or are we going to see Tommy Rees orchestrating a Kevin Stefanski offense that worked here before? And I say that thinking that we saw more of a Ken Dorsey offense last year than we saw a Kevin Stefanski offense.
We're going back to Kevin Stefanski. we visited with Joel Bitonio in the locker room and I asked him about that, right? I mean, it's one of the reasons he, came back for another season was the fact that they were going to get back to a lot of the principles that Stefanski ran in previous years. And they're going to get back to their roots of trying to run the football. The zone blocking scheme, the pull and pin blocking schemes, right? Yes, they're going to throw the ball, especially with Joe Flacco, right? They're going to throw the ball. But, I think this is going to, at least from a schematic standpoint, resemble Kevin Stefanski's offense more than Tommy Rees with, of course, Kevin Stefanski calling the plays.
Project Joe Flacco for me for the rest of the season. What do you think? How do you think this is going to play out?
I have like 8 different projections in my head.
Okay, well, which one is it? What is at the forefront? What is closest to your glasses?
well, it's the it goes either really, really great or it goes really, really bad. Like, I mean, those are the two big ones, right?
Right.
The really great scenario is that Joe Flacco plays like we saw him play in those 5 games back in 2023, right? Where he's thrown for 250, 300 yards a game, more touchdowns than interceptions, and the Cleveland Browns are winning football games. And then there's the other scenario whether he is throwing the ball to the other team too much or he is dealing with injury. And, those are obviously, tough to project. But starting out, I'm leaning more towards we're going to get Joe Flacco, little fountain of youth, at least early in the season. And then for me, I think the question is, how long can he sustain? How long can he sustain a high-level play? How long is he going to be able to sustain his health? Because if he's able to sustain high-level play, we're not going to see the rookies for a while. If he's not, well, then we may end up seeing the rookies before. By rookies, I mean the Dylan Gabriel. And then later in the season, Shedeur Sanders, when they ultimately want to take a look-see at him. But, for me, the question is, how long can Joe Flacco sustain health and high level of play? And the longer he's able to do that, in my view, that means more wins early in the season for the Cleveland Browns than a lot of people are projecting them to be able to achieve.
All right, D, give our best to Jim Schwartz, okay?
I will tell him you said hello, and I'm sure he'll be just doing cartwheels over that, Jeff.
I'm sure he will.
I hope he doesn't say Jeff and Andy who?
Why wouldn't he? He's too busy to listen to our show. He's scheming.
I hope that is
I hope he doesn't. Yeah, exactly. If he's listening to our show, that would explain a lot of what happened with the defensive line last year, wouldn't it?
Hey-o.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much. Bye, Daryl.
You bet, guys. Take care.
There's Daryl Ryder, our Browns beat reporter.